This show is a proud member of Friends in Tech at friendsintech.com.
Good morning, folks. This is your captain speaking.
Technorama.
Remember when?
Technorama.
On this day in tech history.
Tech.
And now, the news.
Tech.
What the chuck?
Technorama.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
Yeah, I'm looking for the best podcast about the Hoover
over there in the media corner.
Technorama.
Hold my beer and watch this.
Unfasten your seatbelts and disregard all safety rules. Here, your flight crew, Chuck and Craig.
Welcome to Technorama, the show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. I am Chuck Tomasi, and with me is Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
I'm good. I'm actually gooder than good.
Gooder than good? Wow.
Yeah.
That's really good. If this is your first time listening to Technorama, thank you for joining us. If you're a returning listener, welcome back. Either way, we appreciate you giving us your time. And speaking of time, this time we've got one of the greatest audio tours for you. This is part one of a two-part series on the Hoover Dam.
We were there in August 2008 as part of our trip to Las Vegas for the New Media Expo.
Yeah, we don't just go on simple trips. We work hard to bring you cool stuff like what we have today.
Yeah, I got to tell you, that the Hoover Dam was awesome. It was huge. Well, to begin with, well, I mean, actually, I'll tell you what. I know there's a couple places in here, and you'll hear it probably in the audio program, but when they map out actually how much land this dam affects, it is a major, major project. And it's not, you can't really get a grasp of it until you see how much land and water it affects.
We had one of the nicest guides. Charlie Harrington was just terrific. He showed us all around and gave us all kinds of stories and history, and I can't say enough good stuff about him.
I got an idea for a drinking game. How about that? Let's see how many damn jokes we have in this show.
Does that count as one?
Yeah. So anyway, yeah, don't give him any hints. Are you ready to get started?
Let's go.
All right.
Hoover Dam, also sometimes known as Boulder Dam, is a concrete arch gravity dam in the Black Canyon of the Colorado River on the border between the United States of Arizona and Nevada. When completed in 1935, it was both the world's largest electric power generating station and the world's largest concrete structure. It was surpassed in both these respects by the Grand Coulee Dam in 1945. It is currently the world's 35th largest hydroelectric generating station. This dam, located 30 miles southeast of Las Vegas, Nevada, is named after Herbert Hoover, who played an instrumental role in its construction, first as the Secretary of Commerce, and then later as the President of the United States. Construction began in 1931 and was completed in 1935, more than 2 years ahead of schedule. The dam and the power plant are operated by the Bureau of Reclamation of the U.S. Department of the Interior. Listed on the National Register of Historic Places in 1981, Hoover Dam was designated a National Historic Landmark in 1985. The reservoir created behind the dam is known as Lake Mead, named after Elwood Mead, who oversaw the construction of the dam. Our tour with Charlie begins several hundred feet under solid rock in one of the 53-foot diameter diversion tunnels on the Nevada side.
All right, now we're standing in one of the original diversion tunnels. You can see there were four tunnels that diverted the river when they were building the dam. Once the dam was completed, they reused these diversion tunnels. And one we're standing in happens to be this tunnel. We're standing back at this location. So out of the elevator, of course the elevator's not on this old drawing, but we come out of the elevator, made a right, the thin yellow line is actually the tunnel that we're taking from the elevator to this location. So we're standing here. You see the door?
Yeah.
This is not an exit. Go through the door behind this tunnel, continues to the other. So think of this. This is how they drill the tunnels.
I'm giving you a little extra because I usually have a limit to a 5-minute talk and then we're out of here, but we've got a few minutes. So four tunnels were drilled four directions each. So they drill this tunnel to this point, and then they drill both directions. They also drilled upriver, and they drilled downriver. So you're talking four tunnels. Each tunnel's almost 4,000 feet in length, 56 feet in diameter. They encased each tunnel 3 feet of concrete. So this is, look up, you can see the lining of the concrete tunnel. So the tunnels ended up being 50-foot diameter tunnels. So once these were completed, after almost 2 years of drilling and blasting tunnels, once they're completed, they build this temporary cofferdam. And this forces the Colorado River, this will be a river coming in this direction, it forces the river to go through the tunnels. They also build a downstream temporary dam, keeping the river from backing into the construction area. Once the river is diverted and flowing through the tunnels, then they can remove 135 feet of the old river bed because they need to go down to the solid bedrock to start placing the concrete dam. June 6, 1933 is when they placed the first 8-cubic-yard bucket. The placing of the concrete is 24 hours a day, 7 days a week for another 2 years. They're averaging an 8-cubic-yard bucket of concrete every 78 seconds around the clock for that 2-year period building the dam. Now, have you heard about bodies being buried inside the concrete?
We've heard the rumors. We've
heard the rumor. Well, it's a damn rumor because there is no bodies buried inside.
No pun intended, damn rumor.
And the dam's completed in 1935, 726 feet high. The base of the dam, 660 feet thick. So the dam's lacking a little more than 60 feet being as thick as it is tall. Once the dam's completed, the next step was to fill the lake. So they closed three of those tunnels. One, two, three was closed off. The last one remained open because we had to continue to feed the river while we're filling the lake. And it stays that way until the level of the lake reaches the intake towers. Now the tunnel we're standing in, when they reused this tunnel, they plugged it off. Here's the plugs. And they connected the last intake tower on our Nevada side to this tunnel with the pipe underneath us, and it's taking water from Lake Mead through the intake tower through the penstock pipe. They call it a penstock pipe, and this pipe branches off into four 13-foot diameter penstock pipes feeding four of the generators with water. Now you feel a little bit of vibration. That would be the water going through the pipe, 88,000 gallons a second going through the pipe. All right, fill in the lake. Now you notice there's four intake towers. These four towers happen to be the only way that water will go from the lake to the river, unless we're in a flooding condition, which we haven't had in 25 years. So when the water level filling the lake reaches the intake towers, then the water will go through the towers, through the penstock pipes, through the power plant. We're generating power, releasing water into the river. The temporary dam is also removed. It's no longer needed. So we're basically refeeding the river through the power plant. And that means they can close the last tunnel. Now these tunnels are closed off with huge bulkhead gates and sealing the tunnels permanently so they'll never be used again. Okay. Now we've reused these tunnels. The one we're in, we used it for the last intake tower on our Nevada side. Same thing happened with the inside tunnel on the Arizona side. Plugged it off, connected to the last intake tower, placed the pipes inside it, bringing the water to the generator. But the intake towers in the front is a little different on these. They had to drill and blast new tunnels for these penstock pipes, and they're called our upper penstocks. They're located about 150 feet above us. So that's the upper penstocks, and below us is the lower penstocks, upper, lower. Our outside diversion tunnels become spillways, and spillways are designed to protect the dam from flooding. So we don't want water to ever go over the dam. We have the power plant below. They build the spillways 27 feet below the top of the dam. Flooding occurs, the water comes up into the spillway. And the spillways have only been used one time from flooding. That was 1983, and we happen to have a photo of that. Here's our intake tower, the level of the lake, Nevada spillway, 62 days the spillways were used in 1983. This is our Nevada spillway, so we're back over here. This is actually accessible for the visitors to come to this area. But 7 feet from the top of the dam was Lake Mead in 1983. So the water at that level starts to go down over the years. Calcium carbonate in the water is leaving the white line that you see around the lake. Okay. But we're in a 7-year drought, and the level of our lake today is almost 500 feet deep at the center. But the level today with a 7-year drought, we're about 62 feet below our average. So when you look at the line, that line's well over 100 feet of white line. But remember, that is our flood level you're looking at, the highest it's ever.
All right. Taking the air. The water temperature going through the pipe below, 53 degrees, because we're taking the water in at the center of the lake. Mm-hmm. So it's very cold, and that makes the cold atmosphere down here. And they're taking, I was telling you, they're taking air to the elevator shaft.
Okay, there's the air shaft.
And that goes back in. But this, the large one here is actually ventilating the tunnels in there, taking air in and out. So very cool down here year-round.
How far away are the plugs in this diversion?
Plugs from here is about 500 feet.
Okay, so it, where the black is that we can basically see?
Actually, no, you can see that for
you. Oh, okay.
I actually walk back there. So we're here.
Yep.
Here's your plug.
Okay.
Now, the entire tunnel is about 4,000 feet. You're talking 3/4 of a mile.
Right.
All of the tunnels.
Now, occasionally on TV, I've seen water come shooting out some of the pipes. What is that
okay,
for?
This would be the upper penstocks.
Yeah.
150 feet above us. All four penstocks have valves. The lower one we're standing in, here's the valves.
Mm-hmm.
The lower on the other side. The upper valves face each other. These open water going into the river. But the upper penstock valves face each other. They open the valves, and there you have the water shooting out now. We're in a 7-year drought, so we're not going to be opening those valves. That water bypasses the power plant. So they open them up basically maintenance just to operate the valves.
Okay.
But those holes you see on the canyon wall when you're looking at the dam,
yep,
on each side, that's the upper penstocks. Okay, they go back to the first intake tower.
Okay.
As you look at the dam, everything on this side is almost identical on the other side.
Right.
Except for the men's and women's bathroom.
Now, on the top of the dam, we have four towers. The first tower on the Nevada side is the men's restroom. The last tower on the Arizona side is the ladies' restroom. And even today, we still haven't figured out why we have the ladies go to a different state and a different time zone. But that's how it was set up originally.
My wife says it's because it's to allow for the lineup over the dam.
I won't argue that fact. But the two center towers, there are elevators, and that's how we operated the tours from 1937 up until 1995 when our visitor center was built. So we take the elevators down to the power plant. Now we're taking a different elevator and a different route to the same location. All right. What other questions your wife has?
It's just amazing to be in these tunnels and think back, you know, 70 years, 75 years, when they were blasting and drilling and trucking, and the work conditions that they were in. Very unsafe. And when you look at the
8-hour shifts, 7 days a week, starting wage was 50 cent an hour. 50 cent an hour. So you can see this 50-foot diameter tunnel. These pipes, not an easy project. The penstock pipes themselves, $11.7 million was the contract for the pipe. The piping system, they're 2 3/4 inch steel pipes, penstock pipes. They had to be manufactured here on site. And when you come by the security check stop, you may have seen the warehouse there, mm-hmm, on the other side. That's the location where they manufactured the pipes. They brought them down. And you may have noticed our cableway system was being used this morning.
Yes.
Well, that was built in 1932, and that's how they brought the large sections of pipe down. They're too large to come down our roadway.
Okay.
So they brought it down.
Huge. Why is the tunnel so much larger than the pipe that it contains?
Well, the tunnels were built to keep the river from ever
breaching or flooding over the diversion, the temporary diversion tunnels.
Okay.
The temporary dams. So this river has a tendency to flood.
Mm-hmm.
Like they most. Didn't want this to ever compromise and flood over. So they had four tunnels to divert.
Following an uprating project from 1986 to 1993, the total gross power rating for the plant, including the 2.4 megawatt generators that power the plant's operations, is about 2,080 megawatts. Excavation for the powerhouse was carried out simultaneously with the excavation for the dam foundation and abutments. Excavation for the U-shaped structure located at the downstream toe of the dam was completed in late 1933, with the first concrete placed in November 1933. Generators at the dam's Hoover Power Plant began transmission of electricity from the Colorado River to Los Angeles, California, 266 miles away on October 26, 1936. Additional generating units were added through 1961. Water flowing from Lake Mead through the gradually narrowing penstocks to the powerhouse reaches a speed of about 85 miles per hour by the time it reaches the turbines. The entire flow of the Colorado River passes through the turbines. The spillways are rarely used. Hydroelectric power plants have the ability to vary the amount of power generated depending on the demand. Steam turbine power plants are not as easily throttled because of the amount of thermodynamic inertia contained in the systems. Our tour with Charlie took us to the generator room on the Nevada side.
So we bring our tour out here. Remember, we got 80 people.
Right, right.
And they're coming down here. The group out there would be ahead of us. They were coming down. So this is how they rotate the tours back and forth.
Okay.
So from this location, you have about 400 feet through the volcanic rock to Lake Mead at this level here. And we're walking up to the power plant.
And we're grateful for this rock. So this is a 1995 tunnel, you said?
Yes, yes.
Huh, looks just like the old ones.
Yes. Well, it's interesting how they drilled and blast the tunnels. Basically the same. They drill a hole, place dynamite, you see some of the drill holes, blasted it out.
Yeah, you're talking about the diversion tunnels earlier, and if a project like this were undertaken today, the natural thought would be use a tunnel boring machine, a TBM.
Well, they had what we call a jumbo drill truck, which was three levels on a huge truck,
mm-hmm.
and they would put it inside the tunnel, and they would drive it up there, and you had three sets of men drilling, placing dynamite, blasting. So that was the system.
It's a big platform.
They may have one large 50-foot diameter drill machine that could do it today. Could be. I'm not sure.
This is what I would consider one of the most scenic places, indoors anyway.
This was the design. Look at the floor. The designs in the terrazzo flooring. They designed it for the visitors. We got the fencing here.
Uh-huh.
You've got the Art Deco here. So you can tell, building the largest dam in the world at that time, they did plan ahead for the visitation. And now we've had over 43 million visitors since 1937. All right, let me get a mic so you can hear me a little better, and I'll do my talk.
Enough. All right. So we're standing in the Nevada wing of the power plant. To my left, you see the generators. There's eight generators in our Nevada wing. On the other side of the river behind me is the Arizona wing. It has nine generators. We have eight over here. Total of 17. If we're operating all the generators, we generate about 2,080 megawatts. But if you notice the light at the top of the generator, the light is on, the generator is operating.
Yeah.
We have
six of them.
Six, so there's two not operating here.
And we operate the power plant based on the water we have to put into the river from California, Arizona. That determines our power. So the power plant was added to move the water from the lake to here. Each of the generators is 7 stories tall, so you're only able to see the top 30 feet, add another 40 feet below the floor. And the power we're generating is divided. 56% of our power goes to Southern California, 25% to Southern Nevada. You guys hear me?
Yes.
Let me
me hear you say Nevada.
Nevada.
Yeah. Oh, I sound like God. It's that again.
This place is like a church.
This is God.
But he said Nevada. It's great. It's not Nevada. So, all right. So 25% to southern Nevada. That's leaving 19% of our power going to Arizona. So that's how the power is divided. How we generate power. If you look at the first generator, halfway down you see a light, an opening, and through the opening is the spinning shaft. It's 65 feet in length, 38 inches in diameter, weighs over 100 tons. At the bottom of the shaft is attached the turbine runner, and this is the part that's turned by the water. So our water's coming from the lake through the penstock pipe.
Yeah.
Now, where we were standing earlier, beneath us was the vertical lateral coming off. So that water speed at the turbine below is about 60 miles an hour, turns the turbine, spins the shaft. Attached to the shaft is the rotor, and this rotor weighs over 560 tons, and it turns at 180 revolutions per minute. It's generating electricity. Also down below, the rust-colored horizontal generator has the small fins around it. This is a Pelton water wheel generator, which provides us with our in-house power. So this is where we get our electricity for operations. Now think of this, everything you're seeing here is almost identical on the other side, so we would have a Pelton generator on the Arizona side. And the Pelton produces 2.4 megawatts, one large generator, 130 megawatts. So think of this, one large generator can provide enough electricity for about 65,000 homes, one generator. Now when they have to do maintenance on the generators, we have a 560-ton rotor. To raise that rotor for maintenance, look up to my left, you can see the two bridge cranes. The first one has our flag attached to it, the other one is right behind. They travel the entire length of the wing on the rails. They're lifting capacities 300 ton each, so there you have it. They can put both of the bridge cranes together to raise the large rotor. The flooring we were talking about earlier, the flooring was installed in 1937 by the Martino family. And you can see it down below. 121,000 square feet of this terrazzo was installed at a cost of around $60,000, including all the Art Deco designs.
Wow.
These designs are Native American designs depicting water or power. It's like an outlet. You have a large design over there. They estimated the cost to have it done today would probably be in the billions.
Of course.
But you can see they did design this for visitation. All right. And we'll from here we'll go up to the exhibit area and we'll answer any questions.
How often do the generators need to be serviced, Charlie?
Well, think of each generator being down. Each one will be down a minimum of 2 weeks a year,
okay.
General maintenance. A large overhaul is probably 3-4 months because they would have to take the parts out, and that's a large, large job. Now, last year, at the end of the October, November, December, number 7 generator, they replaced what we call wicket gates on it. They pulled that large 560-ton rotor, brought it right down, and sit it in this octangles area, sit there for 4 months for the visitors to see. So
how about that?
That was a major overhaul.
Yeah.
How many engineers normally work in here, like for maintenance or something like that, or maybe normally?
Next question.
Okay.
Because anything dealing with how many people work here is a security issue.
Okay.
Okay.
You're done. Get out.
The other group may be coming out, so we will
okay.
Go back.
We'll stay ahead of them.
Good. Now, just to give you a little information, the old, remember we said the tours went from the top of the dam?
Yep.
This is the old tour route. Come out of this elevator, this tunnel to the left, goes 350 feet back, elevator up to the top.
Neat place.
Neat. Art Deco, I love it.
It is.
On the top of the dam, there's a lot of Art Deco up there.
Yep.
Also.
I'm just amazed at how much it's an evolving process. I mean, the idea was in the 20s, the implementation was in the 30s, but you know, you even mentioned that the tour route had to be changed after 9/11, and you know, these tunnels were built in 95.
Oh yes.
Are there
well,
any?
The visitor center was really not in the original plans to build a visitor center.
No.
You just parked on the top of the dam and you took the tour down from the top.
It got too popular.
Yeah.
Awesome. We interrupt this program to bring you this special announcement. Technorama is running a contest. The prize? A free copy of the special edition DVD of the show, When We Left Earth, from the Discovery Channel. If you saw this series on Discovery, you know what an awesome job they did covering the space era. This 4-DVD set has more than 4 hours of bonus features included. To enter the contest, simply send an email to contest@chuckchat.com and put Earth in the subject. Include your mailing address in the body of the message if you want the DVD sent to you. Otherwise, we'll be happy to keep them. Deadline for the entry is October 31st, 2008. We have only one of these, so make sure you get your name in the drawing. It's open to all Technorama listeners except employees of ChuckChat.com and their families. We now return you to your regularly scheduled podcast. Isn't that an oxymoron?
This is Richard Garriott.
Lord British.
Private Space Explorer. You're with Chuck and Craig on Technorama.
Chuck and Craig at Technorama.
The old exhibit building over here is the original exhibit building because this was built in 95. So you would do your tour, but you also had the exhibit building was included. So that's really where the guides were stationed, because they wouldn't just have them stand outside, but they would station the guys over there, and you'd come over and do your tour when you were scheduled for your tour.
Gotcha.
So that's basically what we have. Okay.
Hoover Dam serves as the Colorado River crossing for Highway US Route 93. The just two-lane section of the road approaching the dam is narrow, has several dangerous hairpin turns, and is subject to rock slides. There are just two lanes of traffic across the top of the dam, too. To provide much more highway capacity and better safety, the new Hoover Dam bypass is scheduled to be completed in September 2010 at a cost of $240 million. It will divert the US 93 traffic 1,500 feet downstream from the dam. The bypass will include a composite steel and concrete arch bridge, tentatively named the Mike O'Callaghan Patrick Tillman Memorial Bridge. The bridge and the new sections of US Highway 93 will be 4 lanes wide. The total length of the bridge is 1,900 feet with a 1,080 foot main span. The roadway will be 840 feet above the river. When completed, it will be the first so-called concrete steel composite arch bridge built in the United States.
Okay.
They're looking at
completion date of fourth quarter 2010. Now, this is going to be the largest concrete arch bridge in the United States, 900 feet above the river, almost 2,000 feet across. It's going to be a concrete arch, and you can see they're working on the arch here. And when it's completed, the plan is to take all through traffic off of Hoover Dam, so you won't be able to go from state to state. Once it's completed. Now we have overflow parking over there for large vehicles, so there'll be limited driving over to the parking over there. Okay? But that's the plan. And it's going to be a magnificent structure when it's done. 4 lanes, and it'll become Highway 93. This will become the access road to the dam.
There's a cement bucket.
Yeah, it's an 8-cubic-yard bucket. And here's our time lapse.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. Nice model here.
Yeah.
Of the building of it. This is our cableway system that they were operating this morning.
That's amazing. It's still in service.
Yeah, still in service.
I assume they had to refit the cables.
Well, the cables are good for about, I guess, 50 years is their estimate. They replace them. They're 3.5-inch cables.
So
across.
Actually, I know that it was a big thing, you know, big production. But it seems like there was a lot of, they did have a lot of media, like photographs and video, which I guess was a little unusual for the 30s.
Oh, yeah. Well, the movie below, you guys didn't go through the movie, but
not
the
yet,
movie,
no.
When you first come in, it's 10 minutes long. It's got a lot of the black and white film of the building of it. So the visitors usually start there, get a good overview of the building of it, and then they go through the tour itself. Yeah, I like this time lapse.
Yeah. I'm just surprised how much video and pictures there are of the construction.
And it's great. We got a lot of computers set up here for generating of the power, model of the generator.
When we were down below, we were looking at this level here.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
And there's where a rotor would be. And underneath, this is below, 40 feet below. You got the water coming through vertical from the penstock pipe we were standing on. So the water's branching off through here. That's that 60-mile-hour flow coming through. Goes out about 7 miles an hour into the river. This would be your river. So it takes all that force to turn the large rotor, generating electricity. And here, this would be a turbine runner.
And the nice thing is, everybody's focused on green power these days. You've already got it.
It's from the 30s, isn't that right? Now, it's interesting, the day they generated the first power here, on that day, and it happened to be from the Pelton water wheel we were looking at, it was 9/11/1936.
Oh, no kidding.
Generation of power here. The first time.
The Hoover Dam Visitor Center is situated on the Nevada side of the Hoover Dam. It includes a theater in which tourists are given an overview of the project, numerous artifacts from the construction, and an interactive demonstration that allows you to pretend that you are the operator in charge of supplying the power for the demand. It's easy to think that the generators can just run at full throttle all the time, but Charlie tells us why they don't do that.
Generating, act like you're operating a power plant, generate the power, and turn on the generators and generating your power. You get a timer, power demand, so this is sort of...
First, set the wicket gates.
Okay.
Now wait.
Charlie, you're not... If this was a job application, I don't think you'd be doing too well.
Now, here's our speed, 180.
No. So the generator can be turning, but not generating any power.
Well, 10% will turn it to generate 0.7. Then you just increase your power, and you see the more water, megawatts.
Look at that.
Now, see, we're gaining on it. That's the operator you're supposed to.
So the power demand is 368, and you're up just over 300.
I'm perfect.
Just keep opening the gates till you get there.
Well, like I said, we don't operate our power plant at 100% 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, because that's putting too much water into the river, and that's more water than California, Arizona, and Mexico has for annual allotments.
Okay.
California's allotment annually is 4.4 million acre feet. Arizona's 2.8 million acre feet. Now, an acre foot of water is about 326,000 gallons. Okay. Mexico gets 1.5 million acre feet of water, and the state of Nevada gets 300,000. So Nevada gets the smallest amount.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that Vegas Valley that you see,
right,
almost 2 million people, 90% of their water is right out of Lake Mead, right there.
Now, I'm surprised that you're allowed to... run power boats and things on a drinking water supply.
Well, the drinking water supply is 110 miles long. And it's 500 feet deep. And it's the National Recreation Area. So, and we take the water in at the 250 foot depth, so there's not really a problem.
Is there any treatment to it?
Goes through the treatment facility before it goes to the city, Joe.
Yeah, I want to also ask you, I know about the pact that all the states have, when they
build
the
river.
Has it ever been disputed?
Well, it's being disputed as we talk. It's an ongoing change it. It's because the states, going through the years, they're always, what they're trying to do is get more water out of the river than what it's actually producing, and that can't happen.
Right,
so
right.
It's a working relationship between the seven states that make up the Colorado River Basin, and. They do it as complicated as they can. But the Colorado River Compact was set up in 1922,
And that really divided the Colorado River into the upper and lower regions. So we're in the lower Colorado, and the upper Colorado would be the other four states. So we're California, Arizona, Nevada, Wyoming, New Mexico, Colorado, and
Utah.
You got it, yeah. But yeah, that's one of the oldest compacts that still, you got to go through the, to change it, you got to go through sequences to
I know California, well, other states too have had their share of, you know, we need more water or more electricity, and I didn't know if there was some kind of
Well, they just signed, and it gets, I think it's too complicated for me to understand how they go about changing it, but California has been taking more than their 4.4, so we're trying to wean them back from that, and to do that, they have to cut back or take more from a certain area, and we're trying to get more because of our population here, so it's a balance out. So water is still a problem in the West. So.
And that's why we have lawyers.
Yes. Let's go to the observation deck.
The observation deck at the Visitor Center is a wonderful place to get a view of the dam, generator houses, Lake Mead, and the Colorado River. Being in a canyon, it can get a little breezy. Charlie tells us more about the history of building the dam, what it takes to maintain it, and even some insight of the future of the Hoover Dam.
There's only 78 feet. Beautiful outside. Charlie, where have you taken us? For the listener's benefit.
Now, to me, this is my favorite spot because of the view.
Somewhat, if you can imagine. Like an upside-down pyramid.
You can see our river rafters putting in down below.
Oh, yeah.
They do 11 mile river raft.
But those look like, those aren't your typical inflatable rafts. Or are they? Is it just the perspective up here?
That is inflatable.
Okay, it is. It is. From up here, it looks more like a Tom Sawyer rig.
And then they're coming up here, giving them photos of the dam.
Yeah.
And then they'll head down.
I notice there's a barrier on the river, a breakwater or a floating...
Yeah, that's just buoys to keep the boaters from coming any further. You can see our road coming down. It goes into a tunnel. Comes out right at the red sign below.
Okay, yeah.
Red sign. So all the vehicles, that's the entrance and the exit. And actually from here you're seeing three of the diversion tunnel exits. The tunnel coming around, that would be the Nevada Spillway.
Okay.
Side. That square area is the one we were standing in. That's the tunnel we were in.
Mm-hmm.
On the other side is the other tunnel. You can't see the spillway tunnel because of the canyon coming out.
Yep.
Okay. And there's your two upper penstock outlet valves there.
We've heard ghost stories. Have you heard anything about
ghost
that?
Ghost stories, no.
Okay, there's supposed to be a guy, I think it's on the Arizona side in the penstock. He was manning the valves. This was fairly recently, in the 80s. Fell off of a railing, gave way, he fell to his death, and supposedly he's still down there from time to time.
Good luck with that story.
Now, I do want to ask now, I know you've done a lot of tours. How long have you been here?
This is my first day.
It's your first day?
Wow. He said he was going to have humor in here, right?
Actually, 5.5 years. February would be 6 years.
So all the tours you've had, what are some of the oddest questions that you've had posed to you?
Now, I will tell you, which I consider to be the funniest.
Okay.
A lady on the observation deck, almost where we're at, comes up to me and said, Charlie, this may be a stupid question, but can you tell me why they built this huge dam in front of this beautiful lake? We got a lot of
what an eyesore. It's just from up on the observation deck you really get a perspective of how far down that is, and those guys scaling the cliffs back in the 30s on their little swings and cables.
Well, the high scalers, you know, when you came into the parking area, you may have seen the monument of our high scaler.
Yep.
You can see them over there. On the back of that lists the plaque of the men that died during the building of it, 96 men that died on site.
But the high scalers total almost 400 high scalers scaling the walls, and about 7 deaths from the high scaling. Now you can see the scaling. The wall here,
yep.
Above it, they stopped scaling. Everything below, how smooth it is,
yeah,
on both sides. So that's the work of the high scalers.
Is the river below the dam at the original pre-dam days? Is that roughly where
basically,
it would be?
Basically, yes, yes. Now, okay. This river, you can see it fluctuates,
sure,
depending on, yep, how much power we're generating.
Yep.
At night, there'll be less power going in. During the day, there'll be more. So you can see the water level going up and down.
So we can blame it on
it's
Vegas.
About 60 feet deep here at the maximum, the river depth here. Wow. Remember, the water was about 653 degree temperature going through the pipe, and that's about what it is here coming out, 53, 54.
It's just amazing that this all got built in the 30s.
Well, I think the amazing part about it is they built it in 5 years, 2 years under schedule.
Wow.
You know, it's amazing.
That is amazing.
Now, looking at the roof of the upper penstock house, it looks like there's still a little bit of rock falling and erosion. Is that from the work being done on the bridge?
Yeah. Achievements of the 20th century. Yeah. Now, here's our cable system. They've lowered it down over here.
Okay. Yep.
And I'm seeing...
There was a compressor or a crane on it a little while ago.
You see the edge of it sticking out. They lowered it down, and they'll bring it back up. But this is how they brought the penstocks in. But yeah, I'm sure there's some vibration, a little bit of wind blowing, dust or whatever blowing over here.
We always have erosion, I guess, especially wind around here.
Well, this is some of the hardest rock. It's the volcanic conglomerate rock, and this is one of the main reasons they built the dam at this location, was because of the rock formation. Plus, they only had to go 30 miles to Las Vegas to connect to the railhead, 1,000-deep canyon, and they could build such a tall dam, which was the largest at the time it was built.
Now, this was not the original site of the dam. It wasn't in Black
Canyon.
Well,
actually, they had two sites they surveyed.
Okay.
Boulder Canyon, about 20 miles upstream, and Black Canyon. Those were the only two sites they surveyed. They had different locations at each site, numbered A, B, C, and D, different along the canyon. This site, after doing both sections surveying, this site was selected because of those reasons that I was talking about. But as the dam expands downward toward the... Now, there's over 8 miles of tunnels that were in this project. Not one tunnel needed any structural support. Didn't have to put any scaffolding up to control it. So it was,
wow. That says, I was just looking at the strata of the rock, and
yeah,
and
you can see the difference. From here, you can
there's banding going on, and it's just contiguous. Man-made reservoir in the United
States. Now you get a good view of the Arizona spillway over there.
Yeah, yeah. Hard to believe, looking at it today, that the water was that high.
Well, you can follow the line that goes... Can't hardly see it right there, but that level would go into the spillway.
Right, right.
And it has a 50-foot downward tunnel coming down at an angle, and it connects to the outside diversion tunnel, and they plugged it at that point. So that's how they use both of these.
And you said that the white on the rock is calcium carbonate deposits?
Yeah.
Okay.
This is the water level from 1983.
Now, that must have extended Mead Lake upstream quite a bit, too. Which here is
actually the Colorado. Well, at that time, I mean, the brochure says it's 110 miles long, so it's backing up to the entrance of the Grand Canyon, or the end of the Grand Canyon.
Oh, okay.
110 miles, so that's the end of it. Now, at the entrance of the Grand Canyon is the other dam that was built in 1963, Glen Canyon Dam. So that was the last one built on the river. But yeah, you can see the white line still there, 25 years ago.
And it will be there forever.
Well, we hope it's replenished when the level comes back up.
That would be nice. That would be nice. Cantilever towers. Now, what is the future of the dam? I mean, is there sediments building up in the basin behind it?
Well, you notice that I said that the Glen Canyon Dam was built in 1963. And since that was built, Glen Canyon collects about 75% of the silt that would normally come here. So by building that dam, they're estimating that our silt buildup here is probably, we have about 700 or 800 years before we need to worry about the silt.
Okay.
Because the four intake towers are 250 feet from the bottom of the river, the base of the tower.
Mm-hmm. So that is the silt
above
basin.
The valve
okay.
Stretching so, across the canyon.
Yeah, silt's not a problem for us.
Are there regular inspections to keep an eye on that? Or?
No, that very little silt is building up here because think of this. The river flows through the canyon, then you've got 110 miles of lake. So, yeah, so the, it's settling. Very little is even getting to here.
Gotcha.
And then you have 500 feet of water pressing against it, so it's packed pretty close.
Strong wind gusts across the Black Canyon on September 15, 2006 appear to be the cause for the collapse of four cranes supporting the aerial tramway used to transport people and materials across the Colorado River. Limited work resumed in October 2006, but the crane's collapse caused a two-year construction delay. Because when you look at it from here, if you didn't notice the arches being slowly built, it would look more like a suspension bridge.
Well, the arch will have to be built next, and you can see how they're building it.
It's kind of creeping out.
They'll have cables supporting it, and they've got the tall supports for the cables completed.
Oh, sure enough.
Okay. Once those are in place, then they will continue moving it forward, supporting it until it's completed. And then they'll take them down.
Oh, I think the supports look nice. They should leave them.
Well, you've got a road to go through there.
Oh, that's true. They're kind of sitting in the lane, aren't they?
Yeah. And you can see the cage. There's someone in the cage up there.
That's amazing. I want that as part of the tour.
I always tell my group, I said, now, you have a ticket. Now, your ticket includes a ride on that.
I tried to tell my wife that.
Could take a zip line on one of these cables. Yeah. Zip line down to the water.
So. Now, problem with the bridge is the cable system you see set up with the white towers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's two on each side. September of 06, the original ones they built collapsed.
Oh, really?
So they had to rebuild the tower system, so that or the cable system, so that's put them behind schedule.
Oh.
So when did they start production?
Started in 03, and completion date has been extended from 7 to 8 to now it's 10.
Wow.
Hey, that's got to pose a bunch of challenges that were originally met in the dam building too.
Oh yeah. And it's going to fit, it's a concrete arch, and this is an arch gravity dam, mm-hmm. So it fits right in.
With the symmetry here.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
But I love the model. It shows everything on the dam here. Includes your this diversion building, tunnels yeah. here. And
that's going to give a really neat view, at least for the people on the dam side as they drive by.
Now, when you drive over, you won't be able to see anything.
Why not?
They'll have walls. They don't want you driving 65 miles an hour, slowing down and taking a photo.
Oh.
So because of that, they're going to have a parking area, and you see if you look close, there's a pedestrian walkway. Hmm. So you'll be able to park and walk out.
But you'll still be able to get off on some exit somewhere and then come down that.
We'll interconnect at the Hacienda Casino about 4 miles back.
Sorry. Yeah.
So that'll be the access to
Will regular access. Traffic be able to ride over the dam at that point?
No. Once this is done, all through traffic has to go over the bridge.
So the other side will not connect up with 93.
They'll close that off.
Wow. We were fortunate then to have driven across today.
Yeah, you have a couple years to drive.
That and the Star Trek experience, we're catching the tail end of everything historic.
Now, there's a lot of history that you're not able to see, you can see, but you're
not really sure. Project started.
The cable systems that had the cableways bringing the concrete down, if you go from the covered parking over here halfway mm-hmm. up, you can see a concrete flat area. Now, that had a cable system hooked up, and right behind us, you can see the concrete section here. Was the other section. This was rail cars that the cable systems were on. There were two on each side, and they could move them back and forth, and that brought the equipment and the concrete down. The parking garage is the location of our high-mix concrete plant, and the low-mix was downriver. along the riverside. So they had two mixing plants, mixing the concrete, placing it.
So all the power from the generators in the house below us that we're seeing is coming up through these main lines?
Yes. Now you notice the towers, how they're tilted.
Yeah.
And these over here are tilted.
They look like they're falling over.
They had to be placed at that angle so the wires coming from the power plant would clear the walls of the canyon. It's that deep. So they were placed at that angle. They're called cantilever towers. Now this first one here had to be moved when they built the tour center.
Oh.
That's a newer one.
Sure enough. You can see the first ones are right below the observation deck.
And a little history from World War II. We still have the one bunker.
What?
On the very top of the mountain over there. You see it on the...
Oh, yeah.
That's the only one remaining. There were four here, one on each side of the canyon and two on the roadway coming down. Camp Williston in Boulder City had almost 800 soldiers stationed there, and their job was to protect the dam site during the war. And during World War II, we were closed. Of course, we weren't doing any visitation here, but the traffic to cross had to get a permit. Then you were military escorted across the dam. So you think security is bad now.
Yeah, it's a major asset. You want to make sure it's secured.
And hope you have some lead time before getting to work, I guess. Now, what kind of day-to-day challenges do they have for the dam now? I mean,
water.
Just water levels and stuff? Or?
But we regulate water, so that's what we're here for. So we're doing that as best that you can. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we can't get more snow. I mean, it's...
Yeah.
Now, the great news on our drought is this past winter, the snowpack was somewhere around 122% in the Rocky Mountains. So that means that will, if it continues next year and following years, then maybe we're coming out of it. So the cycle has been drought, flooding. So hopefully... that's the sequence we're into now, because this is a 7-year drought we're in. Mm-hmm. We had another drought in 1956, once the lake was filled, that ended in 56. 7-year drought. The level of the lake, we're about 30 feet above right now than where we were in 1956. The level in 56 was 30 feet lower than what we are right now. So,
well, what are there any planned changes or anything to the dam area that you can talk about or that you know of?
Well, they uprated most of the generators, that, and they were 85 megawatts. Now they're 130. They've changed the turbine runners. They've done that. So the power plant, they've really not done any maintenance at all on the dam itself. The concrete is still curing. They're expecting the dam to last 2,000 years, and there's no structural rebar inside Hoover Dam, and that's because of the pressure that's being pushed onto it from the lake. The pressure from Lake Mead at the bottom is about 45,000 pounds per square foot. Are you guys familiar with PSF? Pounds per square foot?
PSI.
How about PSI?
I'm a scuba diver,
pounds,
so yeah.
Pounds per square inch. How about PEPSI? You familiar with that one? PEPSI? It's a soda called Pepsi. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
No, it's still not familiar.
Well, I got to try that on the engineers back in Hamilton.
Usually I'll do that on my tour, and you'll have the engineer saying, they'll try to come up with something
right.
For PSI.
Yeah.
Something
per square inch.
But that tremendous pressure compresses the concrete in on itself. So the more water, the more pressure, the stronger it's becoming. It's pushed into the canyon walls on its side. If rebar was inside that concrete, not allowing it to compress over the years, would crack the concrete. So no rebars inside the dam, but our intake towers, power plants, spillways are full of rebar. They're not under pressure.
Right.
Like the
dam. I got one more question. Okay. You touched on the curing question of steel concrete, and Kyle was talking about that, and he said that, you know, it's kind of almost like a, like I brought that up, about a half-life almost for the heat as it still the concrete was cooling. Oh, is that what you're...
used that way, half-life.
Well, that was mine. Well, that was mine.
They're saying 2,000 years. So the curing process, 1,000 to complete that. 1,000
really years. Completely.
Yeah.
It's always the 99.99.
Now, I've noticed... as I look out the structure on the arch, mm-hmm. those structures are moved forward, mm-hmm. and they place them, and they just moved this one. I must have moved them last night.
Because they moved.
Yeah, they'll build the form, put the concrete, and once it's set, they'll move the form forward and put the other in. But they're
how
close.
How far forward
close
did it move?
Even support for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was going to say there's no cables out there. How far forward did it move from yesterday?
I'm thinking maybe 10 feet.
Okay.
Yeah, and the other side. Well, you can see the other side's. It looks like it's a little higher. The other side here.
I got an American flag out on top of it. Yeah. That's neat. It looks like you can sense the strain that's happening there, that they're going to need a cable soon.
Well, now, there's cables hanging down, so I think they're placing some over here.
Oh, yeah.
But they haven't connected them yet, so they're working on it. This is so slow, I'm telling you. 2003, I was saying, they're going to build a bridge there, and now look, 2008, and they're this far apart.
Well, they've been working on the road also, and then overpasses. That's really neat.
All right, guys, you have any more questions?
I'm out.
I think I'm good.
That's all for part one. We want to thank Charlie Harrington for taking us all around and Elizabeth Young for getting this whole thing set up. Don't forget to listen for part two coming up real soon.
Yeah, part two is actually where we go into the dam, and you're going to really like that.
It's not just a block of cement. There's a lot of cool stuff inside the public that the public just generally doesn't know about.
Yeah, there's rocks too.
Shh. Don't tell them. Save it for part two.
Oh, okay, I got you.
If you like Technorama, there are many ways to show your support. You can call the listener line by dialing 206-222-CHAT, that's 2428, or you can email us, technorama@chuckchat.com. Don't forget to visit the website for all of the good stuff over there, weekly articles and all daily articles at chuckchat.com. Or how about a donation in the tip jar, one-time or monthly micropayments? Information is available on the sidebar over at chuckchat.com/technorama. If you don't have any money, you can write a review on iTunes Music Store, add us as a favorite to Podcast Pickle, or vote for us on Podcast Alley. Any one of those things is terrific with us.
By the way, if you do make a big donation, we'll be happy to beg.
Thanks to everyone on the Technorama staff for donating their time and talent to keeping Technorama going. And don't forget, this show is a proud member of Friends in Tech. You can find out more at friendsintech.com. We're also affiliated with all the great audio content over at farpointmedia.net. If you're getting this show the old-fashioned way by clicking on the link on the website, consider subscribing to get the show automatically delivered to you for free. Drop either one of us an email, and we'll be happy to pass on more information. Don't forget to tell a friend about Technorama. And until next time, a binary high five.
101. There's half your damn podcast. Expect the other half of the damn podcast soon.